I believe Dr. Charles Drew and my next person, Dr. Elijah McCoy. I don't think he was a doctor, but he was an inventor, Elijah mm-hmm. McCoy. They are evidence of what society probably missed out on.
Yep.
When we enslave, when we traffic, when we oppress, when we discriminate, whatever you want to call it, against people. If there was no Dr. Charles Drew, you know, we're talking about the people who got blood transfusions. Right. Think about the people who were saved during the coronavirus pandemic because of blood plasma. Because I believe they were using that to help some people who needed the antibodies, if I'm not mistaken. So there's a whole lot that we probably missed out on, not just in America, but the world,
mm-hmm.
because we had a society back then that valued one group of people over another group of people, who decided this group of people shouldn't be educated because we want them to be subservient to another group of people. It's absolutely insane. Every human being, I don't care who you are, I don't care how dumb you think you are, I don't care what kind of disability you have, but everyone is gifted with at least one something that only you can do in a way that nobody else can do. At least one something. So in that way, we are all a genius. We are all geniuses in our own right. And so when you snuff out somebody else's genius, when you downplay their gifting, I mean, the person who's, a genius at cooking is just as important as a person who's a genius at physics. I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, you'll survive listening to, you know, if you deal with the person who's a genius at cooking, the person who's dealing with physics, you might need that at some point. They may come up with a great breakthrough that benefits society, but at the same time, on a daily basis, you must eat. You see what I'm saying? So everybody fits. Everybody has something to contribute, whether we're talking in the short term, whether we're talking in the long term. And just because it's not something that you value, like somebody who's an absolute brilliant, I don't want, even want to say the other word, because it wouldn't be very nice, but this is what come into mind at cleaning the house. Oh my gosh, I would love to have that person come to clean my house. Love to have it. But we look at it as the fact that it's a menial task. So this person has to be beneath instead of above. I wish you would read your Bible, because God elevates those people. He says those people that we value the least are the most important. Should be honored above all. So the ones that you are upset with or look down on because they scrub your toilets or your floors or your windows are actually the ones that you should revere the most, according to the word of God.
If I could jump in real quick, Ann. The wagon doesn't move without the mules to pull it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Thank you.
Exactly. So I just think that we as human beings do a disservice to ourselves, our communities, our families, our nations, our planet, by not valuing every person and what they have to contribute, the positive things. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about, you know, the people using their gifts for evil, but those who aren't given a chance just because they are assumed to be less than, they are assumed to be inferior. They're assumed to not have any value themselves. So how could they give anything of value to the rest of the world? I think we are in a bad place because of those stupid, evil decisions. But Reverend Demery, Mike, if you have a different interpretation of it, please do. Go ahead.
I don't have a different interpretation, but I have suggested many times, I'm not sure if I've said it here on Boomerang or if I did it when I was venting on our Coast to Coast show during mm-hmm. some in between songs, but I always thought the best hiring practice would be mm-hmm. you get a file. Mm-hmm. If I've said this on Boomerang before, you guys please stop me, but the hiring board gets a file and the file has a number on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no name. There's no age. There's mm-hmm. no description of their religious background or mm-hmm. anything else. So their color, their race, color, creed, whatever it is. There's no description. You have a number and you have the person's qualifications. I tried to push this with the sheriff's department out here, by the way, as a hiring practice. Wow. That yeah. it shows their education. It shows mm-hmm. their successes, because education isn't always a measure of how good somebody can
exactly
translate that into practical experience. Exactly. They have to have the practical experience. So it mm-hmm. shows their experience. It shows their accomplishments. If it's a physical job like Dr. Demery and I used to do in law enforcement, then it shows mm-hmm. their physical abilities, because they were tested physically. So they've been mm-hmm. tested mentally for the mental acuity. They've been tested for the intelligence. They've been tested for their ability to accomplish things. And mm-hmm. that's it. And you hire people based on this file that says, here's all the good this person's done. There's all the accomplishments this person has. If mm-hmm. you're hiring people to fly a jet, hopefully you're hiring people to have demonstrated the skill to be able to do that at a high level. If right. you're hiring a brain surgeon for a hospital, hopefully you're hiring based on the ability that person has demonstrated to be able to accomplish those things. Mm-hmm. And stop with the names and races and ages, mm-hmm. all that stuff. It's, can you do the job at a high level? And then hire based on that. And that just makes practical sense to me. And mm-hmm. Dr. Demery, I know you're chomping to get in on this. Please do.
I would say this. One of the areas that I wanted to explore, and that is we were talking about Ash Wednesday a little earlier. And the thing that I wanted to bring out was the fact that a lot of my brothers and sisters who are Christian nationalists do not understand history at all. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that the early church was basically African-American, or not African-American, but African in general. Mm-hmm. Augustine, who was considered the father of the church. Augustine was black. Mm. Augustine was an African. Mm. And when you go back to what they call apostolic succession, when you go back to Origen, who studied under the apostle John, and then there was Irenaeus, then there was Tertullian, then there was Cyprian, and then there was Augustine. Mm. All of those people were African. So all of the first church in the first century and the second century, Augustine was at the Council of Nicaea that got all of our books together. They mm-hmm. it kind of ended in the Council of Nicaea. It started in Nicaea and then it ended in the later councils. But all of those individuals, if they only knew,
right.
They were to look and see that all of those people mm-hmm. were Africans. Mm-hmm. They would roll over in their graves.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They literally would roll over in their graves. So that's all I wanted yeah. to say.
But hey, Dr. Jimmer, stay right there.
What Mike said and what you said, Ann, and what William was saying. Hey. So history has a way, like William was saying, of allowing the truth to come out. And the last thing I wanted to say, let me say this last thing, and I'll be brief. Scientists have done studies that shows there's no such thing as race. Mm-hmm. There's yep. culture. There right. is, cultural milieu. But when it comes down to what makes us up who we are, it's at the mitochondrial level, at mm-hmm. the cellular structure. There are black people I cannot take blood from.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so the point being is there's no such thing as race. There's right. only the human race.
Exactly.
At the mitochondrial level, we are all exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. There's pigment differences, but that's it.
On a cellular level.
Right. No, Dr. Demery. Dr. Demery.
Yes, sir.
Stay right there for a second. Okay. I was thinking, you just stole my concept, not steal it, but I'm going to hitchhike on what you're saying. Let's go all the way back. You take these nationalists, evangelicals or whatever religion there is, okay? Mm-hmm. Most of them will say, or would you agree that they believe in, let's say concept. I'm just use that for this term, for this segment right here. Of Adam and Eve, that did happen. Mm-hmm. Do they believe that? I mean, most of them believe that, right?
Who believe it? Huh? Who believe it?
Okay. No, yeah. Every religion, most of them, you know, Christian religions, you know, Methodists, whatever it is, I believe they believe in that there was an Adam and Eve, and that's how it all started. Am I correct?
Right.
Well, that means if it was just Adam and Eve, people started getting married or whatever you do and multiplying or having babies and multiplying, right? Mm-hmm. That means that we're all related some way, aren't we?
Yep.
That's what I'm getting at.
At worst, we're cousins. we're all cousins. Sup, Cousin Mike? Sup, Cousin Demery?
Well, so I'm proud. I'm very proud to be related to all of you.
You know,
likewise.
Matter of fact, I'm gonna open up the boomerang and say, instead of saying my panel, I'm gonna say my cousins are with me.
Right. And, my cousins are 1,000 times more, but cousins nonetheless.
And I just want to reiterate what Dr. Demery said. It's one race.
That's right.
And think about what we're talking about, folks. We are actually destroying ourselves, okay, by fighting one another and denying one another. Because guess what? Like Ann said, everybody has a gift. Mm-hmm. They may not even know what their gift is. And a lot of people haven't discovered their gift. Mm-hmm. Have you ever been on a job?
I'm still working on mine.
Hey, I'm working on mine too. Well, the point is, have you ever been on a job you can't stand?
Yep.
But then you maybe had another vocation or whatever it is, and you absolutely loved it. Mm-hmm. Okay. That is probably closer to your gift. And if you're doing something that you really love, you tend to do a better job at it. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is, and have skills that I don't have.
Likewise.
Dr. Demery has skills I don't have. Mike has skills I don't have. Dr. Cecilia Sims. You know, folks, we can all do something because guess what? When you build a house, and especially in today's time, you don't have one guy just building that house, do you? You got somebody laying the foundation. You got somebody doing the plumbing. You have somebody that's doing the pipes. Somebody doing the sidewalls. Somebody doing the sheetrock. Somebody putting on it. You get the point. We all.
William, why do you think that going way back prehistoric times, why do you think that people gathered in groups? Now you can call them something else. You can call them tribes or whatever. But why do you think people gathered in groups? Because they were stronger together because of all the different abilities that those people brought to the piece of the pie. Everyone had their little piece of the pie. And when you brought all that together, you had a whole pie. And that's why you had communities and tribes and so on and so forth.
Yeah. Now, let's get down to the nitty gritty here. Then I'm going to toss it back over to Ann here. Or who's next? Mike, Ann? It doesn't matter.
It's fine.
If you want to go nitty gritty, based on what we're talking about, and I'm going to bring Dr. Drew back up here, can we all share blood?
Well,
within reason, we can share each other's blood. So tell me how different we are.
Well, like Dr. Demery said, there's some black people's blood that he can't. If he needed one, he couldn't do it. But guess what?
Right. That's for other. That's
but
for
there's
other
some reasons. White people's blood that he could probably that will probably be a match.
Well, I tell you this, if you need a kidney because you're about to die, I bet you won't be concerned what color the person is if they're a match.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Same thing if you need a heart or a lung. When people are on a transplant list and they're at death's door, they just want the transplant.
Yeah, and if I were a doctor and this guy said, man, I don't want that kidney, that guy's black. I said, okay, well, tell Jesus I say hi then.
Right.
You're not going to be here. No, man, look, we need to stop playing. And what infuriates me, okay, you know it doesn't take much to get me rattled, right? And what infuriates me is that people are doing this stupid stuff. Okay, because you are a different race than me, that means I can't work with you. Okay, I work with all types of people, and we got along fabulously.
Right.
Okay, I've also worked with some people that tried to backstab me, and you know that's a whole different people because they had a problem. They had a real problem, you see. So
they had a hole in their soul.
I'm gonna tell you, if you like Ann said, if you need a kidney, you go get that. But you know, I have heard stories that people say, well, I'd rather die. Okay. Well, look, I don't see why I'm wasting my breath here.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. Right. You've been doing us all a favor.
I don't have to waste my time anymore on you. Okay.
Survival of the fittest.
All right.
Well, you know, there was an episode. I don't know if you guys like the Jeffersons, but, sometimes we watch old TV shows around here like they were new releases, but George and Helen's husband Tom, they thought they were going to a meeting, a homeowners meeting, because
I saw that.
There had been robberies in the building. Come to find out, some Klansmen had moved into the building, and so Tom was invited, so he told George. They all went together. And so when they got there, George is just, of course, you know how George is. He was just really agreeing with everything they were saying until he realized, oh, these aren't just rich people trying to do in everybody else. These are actual racists who don't like me. And one of them happened to have, one of the racists happened to have a heart attack. And George was the only person in there who knew CPR. And so the racist son, you know, begged George to save his dad. And he did. But that meant, of course, mouth to mouth, as you know, the way they did it back then. And so when the man woke up, he said, you should have let me die.
Yep, that's my point.
Yeah, and to think that there may be some people out there who would rather die than have a black doctor, a black nurse, who would rather have, you know, not get a blood transfusion, not get a kidney, not get a heart because it came from somebody that doesn't look like them. Okay, it's your choice, your life. I say what?
It's not a logical decision. That's an emotional decision.
Mm.
And do we really want to run our society totally on emotion, or do we want to run our societies in this world on facts and truth and not the fiction that's stirred up by a lot of the media, unfortunately, and other people that are haters and evil?
Right. You know what? I tell you what, I got one better for you. It's just stupid.
Yes.
It's just stupid.
To put it bluntly.
And it's selfish. If you think about it, because I'm sure that this person, as awful as he is, there's somebody that loves them, you know, when he passed, they were going to miss, I don't know, maybe or maybe not. Let's say they would miss him.
Right.
Okay. So
his mama will miss him.
it's my way or no way.
Right.
All right. Well, then, hey, bro, then operate on yourself then. Okay. I mean, it's just, so let's go. Hey, Mike, you're up next.
I am? Oh, okay. So back to our topic for today. let me shift here. I was getting comfortable in my big chair. I know William's got his big chair. Mm-hmm. So my second pick for today, this lady was in the top 50. And this relates to what William and I do on Thursday nights, which is Coast to Coast, where we play all kinds of wonderful, wonderful music, and we don't discriminate ever, except for like evil. We don't let evil into the room that night.
Gotta go.
So, William, I hope you can appreciate my second pick of the night, Nina Simone.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Born in 1933, died in 2003. She was born. Now, excuse me, because I have to go slow when I read, otherwise I get tongue-tied. Born Eunice Wayman in Troy, North Carolina. Simone
was an American singer, songwriter, musician, arranger, and civil rights activist.
Wow.
Her music, here, William, I'm sure you can appreciate what I'm about to say. Her music crossed all genres.
Yep.
From classical, jazz, blues, and folk to R&B, gospel, which is a basis for a lot of music, gospel, and pop. She learned to play the piano as a toddler and played in church where her father was a preacher.
Wow.
She would cross cross the tracks to the white side of town. How many of us knew about all that? Would cross the tracks to the white side of town to study classic piano with a German teacher and was later accepted into the Juilliard School.
Wow.
She went on to get this figure. Now this goes back. Keep in mind her time frame.
Mm-hmm.
She went on to record more than 40 albums.
Wow.
And in 2003, just days before her death, the Kurtz Institute awarded her an honorary degree.
Wow.
So that's my second pick. Bless you, Nina Simone. And thanks for contributing on an ongoing basis to our Coast to Coast show on Thursday nights, because I regularly bring her up and William knows it.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. One of the great greats. And so when we start talking about history, you have to include music. I do a show along with the Waymaker on Wednesdays, and it's called Cultural Excellence. And that is, and what we talk about is excellence in music, art, entertainment, business, and education. And so it encompasses all of that. And Nina Simone is one of my all-time favorites as well. And do you have anyone else?
Well, I still, I think I told you guys about my second, well, I guess I should say fifth, because I named like four people right off the bat.
Okay.
But one of my favorites is Elijah McCoy.
That's right.
You guys may be familiar with the saying, the real McCoy. Mm-hmm. He was the son of slaves who liberated themselves, thank the Lord. He was born May 2nd, 1844, in Ontario, Canada. However, he and his family moved back to the United States when he was 3 years old, and they settled in Michigan, where his father opened a tobacco business. When he turned 15, Elijah McCoy was sent to school in Edinburgh, Scotland, where he studied mechanical engineering. And when he returned to the United States, he landed a job working for the Michigan Central Railroad. And that's when he really got to pour out his genius, because we all know that steam engines were really important to the Industrial Revolution. The problem was they couldn't get very far, but Elijah McCoy, he created the engine lubricator, and that is what allowed steam engines to keep going and going and going and going, whereas before they would have to stop ever so often in order to lubricate the engines. He created them in, I think it was it 1829? Let me look it up again. Yeah, he created the automatic engine lubricator, and he was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame. So my person is Elijah McCoy.
Yeah. And you know, and because as a matter of fact, I think a couple of years ago when we were doing this show, I think that Dr. Demery had mentioned him as well. If I'm not mistaken, Dr. Demery, and you're right. That's where that phrase, you're exactly right. And that's where that phrase, the real McCoy, came from. And think about this. When they had, that train couldn't go far, and they had to stop and manually lubricate it. Manually, okay. Then it'll go a few miles and somebody,
right.
They have to manually. Right. So can you imagine how much time they save? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that? Okay. Mm-hmm. Just absolutely incredible. That's why, folks, let's see, which is this? What is this? I'm going to play this. Let's see which one it is. I don't know. Let's do this. Hold on 1 second. All right, here we go. Come on, dude.
if you're against the Black National Anthem being performed at events alongside the everybody else national anthem,
can you guys hear that?
We need to talk.
Yeah.
Now, my brothers,
let me turn it up.
In the white community,
yes, yeah, very low.
Your ego and whatever varying degree of bias you might have, and listen to what I'm about to tell you and show you. And while I don't expect to change your mind, I do hope to alter your perspective a few degrees. Now, Francis Scott Key wrote the national anthem 1814 during the War of 1812. Now, Francis Scott Key writing the national anthem has been romanticized in our American history. But I'd like to pull back the veil a little bit on the national anthem and why Black National Anthem even exists. And in case you don't know what the Black National Anthem sounds like, here is 15 seconds of a flawless performance at the Circle City Classic by opera star Angela Brown. His family was actually enslavers, and during his career, he actually used to enforce slave laws. So it's pretty safe to assume his opinion and view on Black Americans wasn't that great. To further prove my point, in the third verse, it even talks about putting hirelings and slaves either to make them run or unaliving them. Now, the slaves they were talking about in there is called the Colonial Marines. Now, who these were Black American men, mainly in Virginia and Maryland, who went to fight for the British during the War of 1812 because the British promised them land and their freedom for doing so. Now, obviously, Francis Scott Key considered them Colonial Marines traitors. But I'm going to ask you this. If you were owned by another human being and you were being worked to death for free here in this country, wouldn't you take your chances fighting for the British for freedom and land? The national anthem wasn't adopted for over 100 years. My country, tis of thee, was often what was sung, but it wasn't until there was a big push in the 1920s and 30s with the United Daughters of the Confederacy leading the way to get President Herbert Hoover to make this our national anthem. That's right. The Daughters of the Confederacy pushed President Herbert Hoover, who W.E.B. Du Bois famously noted that was a very racist president, got him to make this our national anthem for all Americans. Remember, this was 1931. Black Americans weren't really real Americans yet. They couldn't vote. They couldn't marry outside their race. They were just expected to work, pay their taxes, and keep their mouths shut because of desegregation and Jim Crow laws. And just remember, this was a time in America when a Black American could say the wrong thing, be at the wrong place, or bump into the wrong person. It could cost them their lives without any legal consequence to their attacker. I'm not going to lie, I'm patriotic, I love our national anthem, I have a deep emotional connection to the song, the first part, but I understand there are tens and tens of millions of my brothers and sisters in the Black American community and other communities who don't view this song the same way, and that's okay. Now, James Weldon Johnson wrote Lift Every Voice and Sing, or the Black National Anthem, in 1900, and his brother John is the one who composed the music for it, and it's a fantastically beautiful, soulful song. You know, and as time went on, I know that it became really popular during the Civil Rights Movement, and it's become the widespread adopted Black American National Anthem. And I'm okay with just calling it the Black National Anthem. But a song had to come about because at the time when we create our national anthem, and for 30 years after that, Black Americans weren't national anything. They weren't even full-fledged Americans until the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and that was just changing the law. That still wasn't enforcing policies. So during the almost entire majority of their time in this country, our national anthem has really never applied to them. So I don't understand why this is such a problem to listen to two beautiful songs being played at events. Because the Black National Anthem doesn't require stealth fighters or helicopters or people jumping in with parachutes. It only requires a microphone and an open heart and an open mind. Try listening to it differently next time you have the opportunity to hear the Black National Anthem.
All right. I'm going to stop
Welcome
it right
to Black History Month, the White People Edition.
Let's stop it right
Today
there.
We're talking about national anthems. If you're against the Black National Anthem being performed at events...
All right. Okay. Fascinating. Okay, there's a couple of takes that I have here. Let me see if I can minimize this screen here just a little bit. Okay.
Well, the thing about the Black National Anthem that I think is so inclusive is the very first line.
Yep.
Lift every voice and sing. Not lift the black voices, but lift every voice. So it doesn't necessarily have to be just the Black National Anthem. It could be the national anthem for everybody who loves the song, because it's about everyone, not just about a certain group of people.
Yeah, you're 100% correct about that. Now, and if you listen to what he said closely, which is a fact, is it the second stanza, Dr. Demery, or the third one that has the racist tropes in it? Is it the second or third?
It's the second.
The second one. Okay.
Okay.
Everybody only hears the first one.
Okay? Right.
And if you have a problem with people who really have done their history and research and they having a problem with it because, number one, who wrote it? Right. Francis Scott Key. All right. Now, he was a slave. His family were slave owners, right? They were slave owners. So I'm not going to have a person like that to try to tell me how to be patriotic. Going back to Dr. Demery earlier, he served in his military. And he mentioned something very that I took out of that. He said the black men and women that he served with, they serve with pride and honor. They love this country. Okay? And I would have to say that most black people that I know still do, they do love this country. I mentioned about my family that's in the military, and they serve with pride. They represented the United States of America. Okay? To come home and get unfavorable treatment, which I think is a shame. So, to me, as far as the Black National Anthem or the national anthem that we're accustomed to being played at sporting events, I'm going to say something that's going to shock everybody. Why in the world are you playing an anthem at a sporting event anyway?
Right.
I mean, it makes no sense to me. For what? I'm here to see a basketball game. I'm here to see a football game. Or, I'm not here to pledge allegiance to anybody.
Okay. Or kneeling.
Or kneeling. Now, let me tell you something about that, too. And you're speaking about Colin Kaepernick.
That's political, and that's drama.
Well, guess what?
That's emotion.
Well, the thing about it is, a soldier came to him and told him, what you're doing, that's what I fought for. For you have the freedom and liberty and exercise. Oh, well, hold on. Let me finish. Your First Amendment right.
So, but does it have its place there at a sports event? There's a time and place for everything.
Well,
and I would defend his right to say what he has to say and his beliefs. Absolutely. Just like I would hope he would defend mine. But I mean, there's a time and place for things. And while I got the mic here for a second, I've got an issue with having a national anthem, which could be considered like the white national anthem versus a black national anthem. Isn't this more separating people by their race? Do we have an Asian national anthem? Do we have a Hispanic national anthem?
Yep. And boxing matches.
This is separating us. And this does no good. If you want to have a national anthem, then have something that serves all of us. And I don't have a problem with our current national anthem, in that the message, if you look at the reason behind the song and you look how it was created, I don't have a problem with that.
Uh-huh.
I do have problems with the further verses and such. But I mean, if you're going to do this to represent all of us,
okay,
and have something all of us can get behind and not kneel and be proud of, and if it requires us to come up with a new national anthem that's inclusive, because this is America. We are, what do they call it? We're the melting pot. So let's blend us all together. Let's have a national anthem that serves and protects all of, not protects, but serves all of us.
Or symbolizes.
All of us can be, all of us can get behind with pride. Why do we have to have this separation at a sports event? And I saw Dr. Demery agreeing that, that we have to somehow, are we going to have a gay rights national anthem? Are we going to have a transgender national anthem? I mean, at what point do we stop this, this wokeism and say, okay, listen, we got to live in the same world together. Let's all come up with something collectively that works for all of us. That's my problem with separating us and going, well, we have to have a black national anthem. Where does the slippery slope stop?
Well, going back to my original point, why do you have to have a national anthem of any sort at any sporting event?
Okay.
Cut it out.
Well, nobody else does the national anthem the way that America does the national anthem. It is not used the way that we do it all over the world. We are an outlier when it comes to us loving the national anthem to the degree that we do.
Mm-hmm.
That said, the reason that there is a black national anthem is that gentleman so eloquently pointed out is because it is offensive to a lot of black people because it talks about, as a matter of fact, the direct quote is, their blood has washed out their foul footsteps pollution. No refuge could save the hireling and slave from the terror of flight or the gloom of the grave. That's offensive to a lot of people whose ancestry, is rooted in slavery.
So let's collectively change it.
Well, I think the black national anthem, as it's called, is very inclusive of everybody. I don't see why it couldn't be the national anthem. That said, you've got a group of people who absolutely love it, so much so that, as you found out, they pushed to make it the national anthem. And just like those folks love their Confederate flags and their guns, they're not going to too willingly give up their quote unquote national anthem. And that's, again, it's another one of those shame on you type of mm-hmm. situations, but it's the way that it is. So if we're talking about us having sporting events and we are the country that not only has our national anthem at every sporting event, but we have different people singing it, and we can sing it to country music. We can sing it to rock and roll. We can sing it fast. We can sing it slow. It's weird. Okay. America is just weird when it comes to the national anthem. But do I think that that's the place for it? No. I think like William said, if it's going to be a problem to that degree, where you're upset because somebody is first of all offended by something that's got blatantly racist lyrics and does not want to stand for it. And then of course, on top of that, you've had the senseless killings of African American people. Yeah, this is the time and this is the place to make a statement. I get the fact that nobody wants to see it. Just like I understood when they shut down the interstate after George Floyd died here in Little Rock, they had 6:30 blocked off protesting. Is it inconvenient for the people wanting to get home? Yeah, but they're alive and they'll be able to go see their families. George Floyd won't. So while we can say that there's a time and a place for everything, that's kind of the problem. If we are, it's the same thing that they were saying during the civil rights movement, telling Dr. King and other civil rights leaders that, okay, it's a different way to do it, a better way to do it, a better time and a better place. No, it is not. If it is making you uncomfortable, if it is making you think about this, if it is inconveniencing you, then this is the perfect time. This is the perfect place. Because as Frederick Douglass said, I have to agitate in order to get your attention and to provoke change.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. And don't I have a First Amendment right? Okay. Don't I have a first? And because the thing about it is, See, the thing, Colin Kaepernick, he wasn't kneeling at first. He was sitting.
Right.
And so, this, soldier went to him. He says, you know, a better way. He said, I fought for whatever you want to do. And I'm not knocking what you're doing. He said, but a better, may I make a suggestion? A better way is to kneel. And he took the suggestion of a white soldier to do that. I'm going to say, say something else. Years before, and just a few years before that, does anybody remember when Tim Tebow, a white guy, was kneeling for the national anthem? Now, there are reasons for doing it may or may not be the same. Okay? Now, they said Tim Tebow was doing it for religious reasons. Okay? He kneeled. He didn't stand and put his hands over his heart. He was kneeling. Okay? So, like I said, I think it's all, I can understand what everybody's, where everybody's coming from. Good, bad, or indifferent. Okay, I understand your reasons, and I don't agree with your reason. I understand your reason, but, you know, my thing is, get rid of it altogether. And I don't see why I need to pledge allegiance to a doggone flag at a doggone football game. That makes no sense to me. I'm not swearing myself into the military. Why do we have to have it there?
You don't want the anthem or the flag. Get rid of both of them.
That's right. let me finish, Mike. It has no business at a sporting event. What is it all about? Am I putting my hands over my heart to say, okay, I'm going to volunteer in the army tomorrow? I'm pledging allegiance to what? I'm not picking up a gun to fight against anything. I'm not doing this. I'm having a time here trying to get or talk to people about voting and get proper legislation over. My point is, why do I have to do something? If this is a free country, now if this was Russia, I understand that. If it's a free country, as long as I'm not disrespecting you, because you have to think about it. That song is a song and that flag is a piece of cloth. But it's almost like I have to, worship that. I promise, bro, I'm going to pass the mic over to you. I promise you, brother. Because I want to hear what you have to say, because we're only having a discussion. Okay? The point that I'm getting at, why do I have to pledge allegiance to anything but God?
You don't.
And why should anybody else get offended because I did this? Just like if I wanted to marry a Chinese woman or a white woman, who else's business is that? Because who's going to pay my bills? I mean, so you're going to tell me, oh, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't do that. Okay, well, how much is the check you going to send me?
Right.
Okay? Right. No, so I'm tired of this. Pledge allegiance. No, absolutely not. If I don't feel like doing it, I'm not going to do it. Now, have I ever kneeled at a sporting event? No. Did I always stand up? No. I sit in my seat. I didn't feel like getting up. And I think that's my business. Now, that doesn't mean I don't love this country. That doesn't mean I don't love a fellow man. But I don't feel like I need to pay homage or honor to something that's not treating me the way I need to be treated. You can slap me in my face and say, look, you should love me anyway. Hell no.
Okay, William.
He's getting a little testy.
It's in the back.
But that's what makes the Boomerang Show a good show, because we all have our different perspectives on things. And our flag is not just a piece of cloth. It does represent something. And in your job, William, and Judge Ann, and Dr. Demery and myself, in our jobs, were we allowed to voice our political opinions? The answer is no. Judge Ann, you know that, sitting on the bench, you can't, you have to be unbiased. The justice scales, the Lady Justice is blind. Dr. Demery, as a pastor or in doing law enforcement, in a job, were you allowed to state your political or emotional opinions? No, you had to be unbiased against everything. So my problem with this kind of stuff is that you can't, if your job is to go out there and play basketball, play football, or do whatever, mm-hmm. keep your politics to yourself. If you have some type of information that you want everyone else to know about because you're a celebrity, well, then fine. Do it outside of your job description. But if you're going to do this stuff within your job description, I have a problem with it because it shouldn't be allowed. Because you have a job to do. Focus on your damn, excuse my language, focus on your damn job and do your job properly with an unbiased set in what you're approaching, what you're doing.
Right.
So that's my issue with this stuff of the kneeling okay. stuff. When you're paid to play basketball or football or baseball, doesn't matter. Focus on your job, do your damn job, and right. leave the politics out of it. So that's my issue with all of this.
Okay.
Mike's testy too.
I love it. I love it. And you know what? And you're right. And Mike, and I tell you what, you ask any professional college, basketball player, football player, hockey, whatever it is, it's not in their contract that they have to stand up for the national anthem. I guarantee you. That's not in your job. That's not in your job description.
Is that part of their job, William?
No.
Is that part of their job?
No, it's not.
It's not.
Okay, hold on. Let me help you both. I see both sides of the argument.
I love it.
On the one hand, somebody like me, and somebody who's a cop, like you and Reverend Denver were, you must be unbiased because what we are doing deals with somebody's very freedom. And so to come across as biased is a very sensitive thing, but does every single job that a person has indicate that they can't, you know, show their biases? I guess that would be a matter of opinion. We listen to
during the performance of their duties.
When you're watching a comedian, they very often let you know which side of the political spectrum that they fall on, don't they?
They're not a judge sitting on the bench, are they?
But like I said, it depends on the job. My particular job, of course, that's not something that everybody needs to know about.
Even the impropriety of what is it?
Impropriety.
Yes.
Impropriety. If we're talking about impropriety, think it's going to depend on your job. If you've got, say, for instance, a medical professional who learns that I'm a Democrat and suddenly doesn't want to operate on me. Okay, that is a bit extreme. But if we're talking again, like I said earlier, I'll just stick with the comedian. I don't think that person's crossed some type of line because in that show, they are giving you their take on it from a funny point of view. That's what they do. They make fun of things. They laugh.
That's part of the job.
If you are talking about a person who's an author, who's writing a book, it is and has been traditionally the job of authors, not just to write an engaging story, but very often they give us a snapshot, an imprint, of what was going on during those times. Mm-hmm. So you can often get an idea of how that particular person felt from a political standpoint, from so many different standpoints. So I don't think that's true for every profession. I won't say that it doesn't apply to a lot of them, but it does. I don't think it applies to every single profession.
Well, I completely agree with everything you just said.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And there's positions like yours and mine. Well, your That's mind different. And Dr. Demery's and such that has no place because again, even the appearance of impropriety in those high level positions where you are taking command of people's lives in some form or fashion, it has no place. Even the appearance of impropriety does not belong. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be paid to play basketball or whatever, it does not belong. And again, if you want to change the national anthem to something that all of us can hold hands and hug and agree upon, I'm all for it.
I would say this. One of the things about being a preacher is that you have to raise the consciousness level of people. Jesus was killed because he challenged the status quo.
Amen.
What a lot of these people are doing that is offensive to some folks, and I can understand that. They are raising the consciousness of people to the point where they get pissed off or they get offended or whatever. Every Sunday, I piss somebody off.
Right. That's your job.
Somebody off because I'm raising the conscious level of where they are to get them to change and to transform.
That's your job.
Of what a prophet does. And you
that's
look
your
at
job.
The Old Testament and you look at the New Testament, the thing that a prophet did was to challenge the status quo.
Yes,
and it pissed people off to the point where they got killed. There were many of the martyrs in the Christian faith that were stoned to death because they challenged the status quo. So all I'm saying is this. I respect your point, Mike. I respect your point, Ann and William. But if you're going to take a stance and challenge the status quo, you're going to piss some people off. Mm-hmm. I have some people that are in the Christian nationalist movement. I piss them off to the point where they don't even talk to me no more. They won't even talk to me anymore.
Wow.
I tell them, how dare you call yourself a Christian? Call yourself a follower of my Lord.
Right.
And do and speak the way that you do. So all I'm saying is this, and I'll be done. If you take a stance to challenge the status quo, you're going to not be very popular.
Right.
I mean, King was popular in some circles, and other circles, he was not popular. Preached one of the greatest oratorical sermons this country has ever heard. He was loved by a lot of people. He was hated by a lot of people to the point where they killed him.
Right.
So the point is this. I can only say this. I challenge the status quo of people every Sunday because I'm trying to get them to raise their conscious level, not to piss them off, not to get them mad at me because I don't want people mad at me. But I have to do certain things to challenge them to move where they are to another level. And in order to do that, there's uncomfortableness, there's tension, there's a little grit going on, and you have to allow people to grow. And growing is a hard thing to do. It's tough. Believe me, it is. It's difficult. But I think when you challenge the status quo, get ready. Because you're going to have people that are going to have issues with you. And I think, Mike, what bothers you a little bit is, correct me if I'm wrong or not, but it sounds like to me is that your status quo is being challenged by what Kaepernick did and what others did. I mean, and that's okay. I mean, that's okay for you to have the opinion that you do. But get this. In order for you to grow, in order for you to move forward in your consciousness, in your level of thinking, you have to move forward in doing that. Sometimes taking those steps is difficult.
You know,
I don't have a problem with his message. I have a problem with when and how he delivered the message. And
well,
I'm okay
see, that's
with
that's the thing. That's the thing. You use what Malcolm X said. You use whatever means possible. Whatever means necessary to get your point across. That may sound offensive. That may sound a little, cutting against the grain, but you do what you need to do to get your point across. And Kaepernick did what he needed to do to get his point
across. Were there other avenues that he could have taken to deliver the
message? No. That was the one that he had, and that was the one that he used.
And it was
He had other avenues he could have used, and he was getting paid to do a job, which was to play football. It wasn't to espouse on his political and or emotional decisions.
But so many people have used their political arena.
Their platforms.
Look at what's going on in our country right now. Look at what the lunatic does every time he gets a chance to get up and talk.
Exactly.
On both sides, by the way. On both sides.
To try to move.
No, not to that extent, Mike. No, not to that extent, Mike. Because what Trump is doing is extreme, folks. He's talking about pulling out of NATO. Are you serious right now?
Because and you don't think the other side does the same thing?
No, sir.
I think they do.
Well, and that's Mike.
I'll disagree because both sides of the political spectrum. Why do you think our nation is 50% divided right now?
Yep.
Half the nation believes in one direct A, and the other half of the nation believes B.
Because
you
got
politically divided. Why are they so politically divided? Because both sides of, if you're conservative or not, they're all battling each other, and they're in direct, vehemently opposed opinions. How does that happen in America? How can half America be right and the other half America be wrong?
It's not about opinions.
Because people are talking about their emotions and they're talking about stuff.
Yeah, Dr. Dimmer is right. No, hey, Mike, hold on one second.
One set of facts doesn't necessarily cancel out the other set of facts because they're both diametrically opposed.
Well, okay.
And I believe they're both wrong.
Okay, but let me share this with you. And Mike.
Who's truth?
Mike.
Facts don't exist because you choose to ignore them.
They are corrupt Democrats. They're corrupt
and
Republicans. Okay, but I'm going to tell you, but it's not equal. It is not equal, and I'm going to share with you why.
Then why are we 50-50?
Let me finish. America right now, their number one concern right now is the southern border. We're going to end on this one right here. You guys go around real quick and your opinion. I'm going to give you a fact. Both Democrats and Republicans in the Senate worked out a border deal. The most conservative in history. That's a fact. Fact check me on that. Okay? The House, they said it's going to be dead on arrival without even reading the doggone thing. But what they've been preaching for the last year, fix the border, fix the border, fix the border. And all of a sudden they come up with, it may not be a perfect solution, but Republicans and Democrats alone say, look, this is the best one we've had in over 100 and some odd years, or this is as good as it's going to get. And you want to do something? You want to do something now? Let's do this. And the Republicans shut it down.
Why?
Because Trump told them to.
That plan was loaded with money for Ukraine and everywhere else. They wanted to spend more money in other countries' borders than they would spend on our own border. Go back and read it.
They wanted to spend more money on Ukraine's border
than they would spend on the American border. Don't give me that best plan out there. No, get all the fat out of the project because they want to spend all this money elsewhere, but it's a border control policy. No, it's not. It's about spending money elsewhere outside of the United States.
Mike.
Go back and read.
So do nothing and then go home for 2 weeks on vacation?
The president of the United States right now has the ability to do something without the House or the Senate.
Well, guess what?
They can remain in Mexico. They can do all the kinds of things.
That's not true.
Millions and millions of people have crossed this border because Biden, when he came, and I hate both sides. You know I do.
Yeah.
But Biden canceled all the policies that were working to some degree, and he has the ability to fix it right now with the stroke of a pen. Is he doing it? No. Is he demanding that something go through Congress and the Senate to send money outside of the United States for their borders, but not ours? No, I'm not buying it.
They're an ally.
I'm not a Trumper either.
Mike, they are an ally. And guess what? The whole civilized world, you're talking about Germany.
So spend more money on their border than our own.
No, hold on.
Is that what you're saying? Spend more money on the Ukrainian border than our own.
No, I'm not.
Is that what you're saying?
No, don't put words in my mouth. That's not what I'm saying at all.
I'm asking.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Let me finish. Okay, let me finish. No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is they had the most comprehensive package they've ever tried to pass. So what you're saying, hold it. Let me finish, Mike. So what you're saying is, okay, because we already got into this thing with Ukraine. And if you don't do that, do you know what the threat that Russia is going to have on the whole Eastern world and perhaps with the United States? Do you know that? Are you going to let them go back and take a country that's not theirs? Okay. Now, also,
don't tell me this is a border control policy when you're spending all the money in Ukraine.
They're not spending all the money in Ukraine.
Fuck up my butt.
They're spending enough money on the border right there to increase the border control by 1,500 more agents. They're going to make the processing much easier. They're going to put more patrols there. They're going to do a lot of different things with that. And so what I'm saying is that the Republican, Mike, let me finish. They said, Republicans are saying, we want something. They shot it down. If Trump had said, yeah, go along with it, they would have gone along with this thing, Mike. The reason why they shot it down, because even Mitch McConnell was going to go for the bill. The majority of the Senate was going to go for the bill. Okay. But Trump got on there, said, don't pass a border bill because he wants to run on it.
Forget that's Trump. A fact. I need to ask you, that's I need to fact, ask Mike. You one question. William, let me ask you just one question. If this is a border control amendment or a policy, why does it have a bunch of pork in it about other countries? Why can't
that,
it just be?
That kind of stuff always happens. We give Israel.
Does it make it right? Does it make it right that it's got all this pork in there?
Year.
And then we'll give
does that make it right?
All the people out of Gaza? Is that right? Heck no.
If you're going to pass laws, make them about that law. Don't label it one thing and it has 47 other things in it. If you want a border control policy, write a border control policy. Don't put all this other pork in it. Don't put all this other
Mike,
stuff. Make this 450 pages long.
Do
one thing.
That's what Congress has been working for years. They always pack it with pork. Democrats
and both sides always mess it up.
Okay, good. But are you saying is don't do nothing because Trump said don't do anything?
I don't care what Trump said.
Well, that's what he said, and that's why they're not doing anything, Mike.
But if Congress wants to do something, then label it one thing and do just one thing.
Well, they haven't
done
anything.
Label it one thing and do all this other stuff.
This is the worst Congress.
I'm not okay with all the pork.
This 118th Congress is the worst. They generally pass about 400 bills a year. Do you know how many they've got passed this year so far? 30.
And okay, then can I help the two of you out just a second?
Okay, go on.
Get Ann in there.
I think this might help.
Okay.
Please.
When it comes to politics, it is very much a negotiation. I get what I want, you get what you want type of situation. What you have had is a standoff between the president wanting to give more money to Ukraine and now to Israel. And then you had the Republicans who wanted tougher border security. So finally, they both got to a point where they were at a head and they were like, okay, I want this and you want that. Let's make a deal. And they were able to finally come up with money for Ukraine, money for Israel, and the border control security policies that the Republicans wanted. That's where the negotiation came from. Now, while I understand that what we would want, because logically thinking, you would think just make a bill for Ukraine, just make a bill for the border. That's called common sense. We are not talking about common sense. We're talking about politics and the way that they get these things done in Washington is counterintuitive to common sense. They're not going to budge because like you said, Mike, it's a two-party system and the two-party system has worked for America up to a degree, but here lately it is pitting us against each other a whole lot more. So we need to do something to beef up our democracy because what is happening is it's becoming more fractured because of politics as well as on race and other issues. Mm-hmm. I hope that kind of cleared it up a little bit to help you guys understand
up again next week.
Well, I understand it. I don't like it.
No.
Right.
And I understand what you want, Mike, too. You want a system that will never be perfect. And like Ann said, I think you so eloquently put it, is that politics is all about negotiation. You give me what I want, I give you what you want, okay? I'm concerned about this, you're concerned about that. I understand. But I'm going to tell you something. And I do agree, and I keep saying it over and over and over and over again. Yeah, there are Democrats I don't like, and a whole bunch of Republicans I don't like. Okay? And we don't have time to go through that, and I'm gonna tell you why. Do you know that we're approaching also another shutdown of the government, and you know who's holding that up? Republicans.
Why?
Because of Trump.
Out of control spending.
No. Yep. Well, I tell you what, if you don't fund the government, then you're gonna have millions of your federal workers that won't get paid, things get shut down, and then you're going to talk about inflation and everything going up, the prices of everything is going to go back up when it's come down tremendously from last year. So you don't shut down the government.
We're already $33 trillion in debt, and it keeps rising every time, and they keep kicking the can down the road, mm-hmm. and they want to pass more spending bills. So now we'll be $34 trillion in debt, $35 trillion in debt, and it has to stop somewhere. And these out of control spending bills, I can understand why people are objecting to them, because it just perpetuates what's been going on for decades between Republicans and Democrats. They all keep kicking the can down the road. Well, spend.
Okay.
Stop. I got to balance my checkbook. You got to balance your checkbook. Ann's got to balance hers. Dr. Demery's got to balance his. Balance the damn budget.
Yeah, I understand that. Now, I'm going to say this. The last thing I'm going to say about that is
damn,
that.
Damn, where's my blood pressure pills?
Calm down. It'll be okay, man. Okay, let us not please have medical emergencies.
No, we don't need any more. We don't need any more.
I don't
want to
deal
but
with
it. I tell you what.
Edith, I'm having the big one, Edith.
Don't do it.
Okay, Mike, I'll tell you. You know, Mike, I'm going to say what you say to me all the time. I will defend your right to be wrong, okay? All right.
I do defend your right to be wrong, and that's hard for me, as wrong as you are all the time.
Don't worry about it. But I'm right today. I'm right on this.
You know I love you, buddy. Come on.
I love you too. Hey, look, like I said, I don't want this to be a soft cotton show. You know, soft ball questions.
Well, you succeeded.
Great.
You've succeeded.
And I'm doing my job. I'm doing my job, right? Hey, guys, I'm sorry. Hey, look, we just went over a little bit, maybe 10 minutes. But anyway, I've got to get ready for Sunday Night Gold. Mike, Dr. Demery, and, hey, great discussion.
Yes.
I love the heat. I wish.
We know.
I love the heat.
Testosterone was on fire this evening.
Hey, guys.
All things being said, I really do truly appreciate all of us on this panel here, because yes. I think we have the chance to do speak freely. And I think all of you make very valid points. Hopefully I've made some along the way, and hopefully we all have something to take away from what we do here on Boomerang. So thank you all.
Well, if we don't do anything else, I think we stimulate thought.
Right.
Well, we do some stimulation. All right.
Bye, Mike.
Well, I appreciate the fact that we can have this discourse respectfully amongst ourselves. It's not going that way in the rest of the country. And I think somebody has to be an example of us talking and listening and hopefully being able to grow and mature and be enlightened, so that we become a better society.
Absolutely.
You guys just need to elect me exalted ruler of the United States. I'll be very benevolent.
Thank you, Trump.
I'm far from Trump. I'll make everybody happy. I know you are. I promise to be a very benevolent ruler and just rule for decades.
Hey, look, I'm just waiting for the check. That'll be all right then. Hey, guys. Hey, Dr. Demery, Mike, and great show, man. Love you guys. Enjoy your Sunday.
And,
hey.
And you have a good trip next weekend.
I will. Yeah, we'll be off next week. I'm going to Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm going to party. It's a birthday celebration for me, my sister, the Waymaker, Summer Wolf, and a few other artists. Mike was invited, but he claimed that he can't afford the plane ticket.
Well, I've been picking up cans along the freeway here, trying to get enough money.
Okay,
I'm accepting donations, by the way.
You know, folks,
Busbury, I'll come out there on Greyhound because I can't afford to fly.
Ladies and gentlemen, he's lying. But he's lying. Hey guys, have a great day.